Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to the Millennial Nursing Podcast. This is your host, Dominique. I know I haven't been consistently on the podcast, recording the lectures. It has been such a crazy past few months, but I hope that I can create a more regular schedule for everyone so that we can continue the lecture series that it has been quite a hit on the podcast. So thank you for continuing to listen to us despite of our lack of presence, if anything. So I'll go ahead and get started. We are continuing the oncology lecture for interventions. Thank you guys so much for staying tuned. Hopefully this is a good continuance from the oncology introduction. We're going to go ahead and get started with the interventions, with beginning it with surgical therapy. So I really wanted to start off just by defining some of the terms that you may be out there hearing on your floors and your clinicals. So the first surgical therapy for oncology is a curative approach. So this is defined as a total tumor eradication. So in layman's terms, you're pretty much trying to get rid of the cancer as much as possible. The next one is a palliative approach, usually used for large tumor masses that, you know, at this point we can no longer cure. So they will go with a palliative surgical therapy approach. You'll also hear reconstructive surgical therapy. This is usually covered by insurance for those who underwent surgery to take out some sort of cancer. So for instance, your breast cancer patients who underwent a mastectomy would be offered a reconstructive surgery to be done whenever the patient decides that they would like to proceed with the type of surgery. There is also prophylactic surgical therapy, and this is to remove a non-vital piece of area that is at risk for change in the cell. So this is more of a preventive measure. You will pretty much aim to remove a mass or surrounding tissue until healthy tissue is acquired. There's also a laser approach where it's usually used for prostate cancer, and these types of surgical therapies are a little bit less invasive compared to the other surgical therapies. So as far as pre-op and post-op care will really depend on the type of surgery, we'll go over that on another lecture piece. The next type of intervention that we'll be going over is radiation therapy. So what is radiation therapy? This type of therapy interrupts cellular growth, which is causing a irreversibly damaging into the DNA. So what this does is it delivers a precise dose of radiation to a specific area, kills the healthy cells as well as the cancerous cells, and it typically kills the most rapidly dividing cells. So there are different types that you should be aware of. There is an external teletherapy. For instance, it's usually gamma ray or particular beam. The assessment for this usually involves, assessing where the beam is going. So really assessing the interior and posterior part of the body. Interventions really is about skin care. You know, education really involves not using lotions on areas where there are marked with tattoos. Physicians will tell them specific lotions and creams that they can put on the area. We typically advise for our cancer patients to use mild soap like Dove. And the skin can be dose limiting, causing them to skip a schedule appointments if the skin is not up to par. So it really depends on the nature of the skin. You will also feel fatigue. So the education around this is really letting them know that the fatigue and being tired really starts mild, and by the end of the treatment, they will feel some sort of fatigue. The therapy is usually done Monday through Friday for 4 to 6 weeks. The effects may last for weeks or months, but usually do well for the first 10 days without feeling any kind of effects. The next one is internal brachytherapy. So this is radiation delivered internally. So usually used in combination with teletherapy. So for instance, you know, using iodine for the thyroid area. So the interventions really surrounds about minimizing risk for exposure. So it's really important for patients and family members to be wearing a radiation badge. Pregnant nurses and children should not be near this patient. It's usually a limited visitation, which 30 minutes per day. They should be at least six feet away from the source, from the foot of the bed, and behind or some sort of behind of shield of a wall. It's like anyone that's in the room should be using a lead apron. And it's also advised to be changing linens only when absolutely necessary and double flushing when using the bathroom. The next section that we will be going over is chemotherapy, which are antineoplastic agents that kill tumor cells by interfering with cellular functions and reproductions. So it is pretty much the use of chemicals as a systemic therapy to beat cancer. So there are different types. There's a single agent versus combination. Obviously, chemotherapy has different types of agents. The main goal is that you're killing cells in a specific part of the cell cycle, and or you're killing a non-specific part of the cell cycle. So most clients will take treatment in combination to kill as many cancer cells as they can to allow healthy cells to regenerate and go again. So it's a 21-day cycle, also done in 28 days. So really depends on the calendar. So day one through 14, you will be on drugs. You will be monitored on day 10. You will have to more than likely draw labs to make sure that all of your levels are normal and okay to tolerate. From day 14 to 21, you will not be on chemo. You will try to have, this is the time period to allow the healthy tissue to really recover. On day 21, more labs will be drawn. And then day 22, a whole new cycle begins. So the last chemo intervention that we'll be going over is hormonal manipulation. So this aims to slow cancer rates by decreasing the amounts of certain hormones. So there are different types. The first one is hormone agonists, which upset hormone balance and disturb the uptake of their hormones, such as testosterone or omegastrol. The second one is hormone antagonists. These bind to specific hormone receptors on the tumor cell, and they prevent the needed hormone from binding to the receptor. The third one is hormone inhibitors, and these inhibit production of certain hormones. So this is a new class used in treatment of breast cancer called aromatase inhibitors. So the most important and the meat of this lecture is really managing the side effects for chemotherapy and radiation. So I'll start off with the current side effect for neutropenia, which equals to decreased white blood cells. So the management for neutropenia is to remind the nurse to really protect the patient. So meticulous hand washing is key. No children and visitors, as much as possible, no plants, raw fruits, vegetables, or meats. They really should be on a high-calorie, high-protein diet. We really should be monitoring temperatures every 4 hours and doing white blood cell counts, differentials when it comes to our labs. Usually, you'll see these patients be placed on Neupogen, either via IV or sub-Q. It's really important to notify the healthcare provider if the temperature is more than 100.5. This really indicates that the body is increasing in temperature to kill bacteria. And at this point, your white blood cells are pretty much trying to fight some sort of infection, so they have to be notified. It's really advised to avoid any public areas like malls or anywhere that has large crowds, so especially when your white blood cell is low.
It's encouraged to have chest x-ray, usually arriving in the ER with symptoms of neutropenia, just to make sure that we're trying to rule out pneumonia. And it's really important that we do not delay chemotherapy, even if a patient was neutropenic, because we don't want the cancer cells to have time to even regenerate. So at this point, when they are in neutropenic state, you might see physicians lowering a dose at some point, or even if you have to delay it. The next one that we're going to be going over is the side effect for decreased platelets, so your thrombocytopenia. So if your patient is experiencing thrombocytopenia, it's encouraged that we avoid IM injections as much as possible, so limiting any kind of venipunctures because of the risk for bleeding. You're always supposed to apply pressure to all venipuncture sites for 5 minutes, using an electric razor versus a shaver, even for women. Stool softeners to make sure that they don't do any kind of a Vasava maneuver to defecate. Again, this increases the risk for bleeding. We're monitoring blood counts and stool for occult blood. No rectal meds or temperatures. We're avoiding blowing the nose with force. And just notifying the healthcare provider if you see any kind of risk for increased bleeding. So the next side effect that we're going over is a decreased red blood cells, which is, as we've already went over in our other lecture, is anemia. So pretty much management for this is you really don't want to do anything until your hemoglobin and hematocrit goes below 7 and 21. So hemoglobin is 7 and hematocrit is 21. You're really going to go according to blood values. So you will see orders for blood administration if the hemoglobin is below 7. You're really supposed to promote adequate rest periods, warm cloths and blankets, supplemental oxygen, transfused with packed red blood cells as needed. You will see these patients on Epogen, which can be given IV or sub-Q. It's typically given every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, along with chemotherapy. The next side effect that we'll be going over is alopecia, and this is also known as hair loss. So the management for alopecia is gentle, infrequent shampoos using wide-tooth combs. There's also such a thing as called a scalp tourniquet during chemotherapy, but usually it's not used in patients with leukemia or lymphoma. It's also encouraged for our patients to really be supported throughout this time, especially if it alters your physical appearance. So selecting a wig or a scarf or a hat really helps patients go through the process. Hair growth really starts 1 to 2 months after the treatment stops, but can take up to 6 to 12 months before women really start feeling that it's not needed. So obviously wigs can get very hot, and insurance will actually cover synthetic wigs if depending on insurance. Must be informed for the patients that hair may change in color and texture, but will eventually grow back. Usually starts 1 month after chemo treatment is completed. Inform the patients that they will lose hair everywhere, including eyelashes and eyebrows, arms and legs. And inform them to keep their head warm, since body loses 10 to 20% of heat through their head. The next side effect is esophagitis / stomatitis. So the management for that is really to also watch out for candida. Brush out with soft bristled toothbrush after each meal. It's really about oral care at this point. Encouraging to floss unless you are at risk for bleeding. Promoting a soft, bland diet. Generally having little to no saliva can really cause like chapped lips, so encouraging lip emollients and some chapstick, things like that. No smoking, normal saline or bicarb rinses, obviously to avoid those with any kind of flavors like alcohol, like Listerine, things like that. Pain mouth is really common too. You'll see it's like pain mouth sores to be treated with Melenta. And if radiation goes through the GI tract, you can experience a lot of diarrhea. So help treat symptoms according to that. The next side effect that we have is anorexia. And this is in relation to the taste changes from the alkalizing agents that, you know, through chemotherapy. So the management for that is small, frequent meals, high calorie, high protein, foods that are preferred by the client and always to be served at room temperature, dietary supplements, limiting fluids with meals so that they can really take in more of the protein and the high calories, using plastic utensils. Taste change alterations can really take an excessive amount of time to resolve and can last for many years, so education on that. Encourage them to try other foods that they used to dislike and may have changed now. And clients at this point may also be placed on dietary supplements such as Ensure, milkshakes, and promoting blended fruits that they like. And some chemo patients may also be put on TPN if they're not getting all of their dietary needs. The next side effect is nausea and vomiting. And that is really managed through antiemetic drugs given before treatment. So usually you'll see patients on Zofran and literally, you know, thereafter they can anticipate nausea, vomiting symptoms even after the treatment. So it can occur at 2 to 3 days after. And having delayed nausea, vomiting increases problems really throughout the rest of the therapy. So just giving them that education, promoting cold foods, clear liquids, crackers, and avoiding spices that and fats. Nausea, vomiting is dose limiting, so you'll see them having to revise doses because of that. And I think that's it. The next one is fatigue, and to manage that, you have a major source of research studies. Fatigue can stay for years after treatment. We kind of talked about this a little bit before. Dose can accumulate at this point, so causing more fatigue. So encouraging the patients to take frequent rest breaks. And the last one is chemo brain, which is also known as loss of memory. It occurs a lot in breast cancer patients. Patients have a hard time remembering anything as a result of the chemotherapy. Sometimes the effects really affects memory and recalls. Usually it's short term. Patients will leave themselves like notes so that they can remember things. And usually you'll see patients experience this for 6 months to 1 year post-treatment. And worst case scenario, some patients will never regain short-term memory. The last thing that I really want to promote into this podcast, especially for our cancer patients, is the importance of therapeutic communication. So as nurses or primary nurses for these types of patients, you know, it's really important to be available, you know, especially during these difficult times, you know, always exhibiting a caring attitude, proactively listening to fears and concerns. Sometimes, you know, can really provide relief from any kind of distressing symptoms. It's really important to provide essential information regarding their cancer and cancer care that is as accurate as possible. And to establish, you know, realistic expectations about what they will experience during treatment. During this time, it's really important to maintain this relationship that's really based on trust and confidence. And it really starts by being open, honest, and always approaching all types of communication through a caring approach. You know, some nurses really need to focus on the important use of touch. You know, use of touch is really to show how much you care. So squeezing the hand or a hug at times is really more effective than just words. So obviously, it's important at this time to maintain hope, which is key. And hope at some points, in depending on the nature or how severe your cancer is, hope varies depending on the patient. And sometimes, you know, hope can say, you know, it's not serious, it's not cancer, you can beat this cancer. And at times, hope, it can be curative. And it really depends on the patient's outlook, the patient's values. And so as nurses, we really do need to understand the power of hope and how it provides this sense of control to get them through this difficult time. And it looks like we can end our cancer lecture here. Thank you guys so much for continuing to listen to the podcast. I really do appreciate it. We hope that in the near future that we can restart the blog to kind of have all of this available for you. I do have plans of changing dlmjourney.com to dlmnursing.com, so please watch out for that. And until next time, take care and happy nursing. Bye.